I will never tell anyone to throw out food, but if you have Crisco in your cupboard right now, throw it out. And like maybe even in some kind of biohazard disposal way, because I do not think that that should be anywhere in our environment.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. So, it is the holidays, it is a time of indulgence, and it's also that time of year where we start to look forward. We look ahead to see what it is that we really want to commit to in the following year with respect to our health or our businesses or our families or our contribution, all of those different pieces. And one of the things I know after being in practice for the last 13 years is people have the best of intentions as they head out into the new year, but without really great planning, without an idea of how you are going to achieve those intentions, it's really hard to follow through. My guest today has got the inside track on how we eat for success. Ashley Sauve works with That Clean Life. She is a holistic nutritionist. And what we talked about today in our podcast were all of the inside trends that actually make people successful when it comes to eating. We go through our mutually created top 10 list of foods that should be in everybody's cupboard. We talk about what it takes to actually create a meal plan that will enable you to be successful. And for our practitioners out there, we talk about how to make these types of tools accessible to the audiences that you serve. If you are someone who values what you eat or recognizes the role that food plays in terms of your success, both as an entrepreneur, but as a healthy individual, I promise we have got the episode for you. It is really my pleasure to introduce you to Ashley Sauve. Ashley Sauve, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Megan. Super pumped to be here with you today.
Well, we have a lot of ground to cover today. And before we do that, Ashley, I'm wondering if you can just set the stage for everyone, share with everybody who you are, what you do, and how you got to this place in your life and career.
Yes. Okay. So I'm Ashley Sauve. My background is in actually holistic nutrition. So I'm a holistic nutritionist. I also work with a company called That Clean Life. So I handle all of their growth here at the company. We're a meal planning software for health professionals. The way that I fell into this is actually really organic. And I always say it's kind of like a love story. So I had my practice here in Toronto, seeing clients as a nutritionist. And one thing that I always really struggled with was creating meal plans for people. And then I actually applied for a content creation job at a company called That Clean Life, doing recipe development for them. During the interview, I sat down with Abigail Hopkins, our co-founder, and she told me that they had actually just launched a platform for professionals to create meal plans for their clients. And instantly, I was like, that sounds amazing. I stayed up all night last night creating a meal plan in a Word document for a client. So I am your ideal customer. And things just sort of evolved from there. I started recipe developing for them. And then as our software grew, we actually now exclusively serve practitioners. And it just sort of, I fell into it, my role kept evolving. And now as the growth lead, I have the pleasure of being able to interact with thousands of healthcare professionals all over the world every single day. And more importantly, each of those professionals is like a little node affecting hundreds and thousands of their own clients. So, you know, we're a remote team, we work from home, but when you actually look at the impact of how far we're reaching in terms of helping people improve their lives by eating healthier, it's actually really amazing. And even though I'm no longer in practice full time as a nutritionist, I feel like the impact that I'm having to help the world be a healthier place has expanded so much.
I love this insight. And I just want everyone to know, because if they're sitting there and they're like, well, I'm not a practitioner and I don't need to build meal plans for people. Part of the conversation I really want to have with you today is I want to get the inside track on what actually makes people successful eaters. Because our audience is comprised of, sure, we have some health practitioners, but we have a huge number of entrepreneurs who are like, I get that what I do multiple times a day, eating in this case, is going to have an impact on my health. And we have this tremendously busy audience. So what I want to get from you, Ashley, among other things, we're going to talk about some holiday pieces, we're going to talk about January reset, is what are the fundamentals that need to be in place in order to have an effective meal plan? Because I think it's not just like the composition of food, but like what are some of the things that actually make people most successful in executing on meal plans? Because I really believe, and I know for practitioners, this idea, or for entrepreneurs, sorry, this idea that if we fail to plan, we should plan to fail. So what do we need to have in place to be able to eat effectively as people doing work in this world?
Totally. I love that question. And obviously working with so many practitioners, I have so many insights into what works and what doesn't. And it all comes back to simplicity and making sure that your goals and your plan of action is something that's practical and sustainable for you. And I know that everyone has heard at some point that they need to make sustainable choices. So what does that actually look like? In the first place, you have to make sure that you're actually loving the food that you're eating. So don't set goals for yourself and make a meal plan for yourself that is completely focused on eating raw kale every single day when you hate raw kale. That's not going to get you any closer to your goals, because lunchtime is going to roll around and you're going to, instead of thinking about that salad that you have in the fridge and how excited you are to eat that, you're going to start opening up your Uber Eats app or planning some kind of excuse to go out with colleagues for lunch to grab some sushi to eat something you actually do like. So first and foremost, make sure you're eating food that you actually like. And then one thing that actually I never really thought about before working with so many practitioners who are making meal plans for their clients is leftovers. Leftovers are huge. Most people eat, say, 21 meals in a week. You got breakfast, lunch, dinner, 7 days a week. They do not have time to cook a brand new meal every single time that they eat. So creating space in your week to cook once, eat two, three, even four times, like meal prepping, is huge. Because if you have a plan, but at the end of the day, you get home and you look at that recipe that takes 45 minutes and you're too exhausted to make it, it doesn't matter. You're still going to pick up your phone and order a pizza. So leftovers is actually huge. And then, of course, making sure that the recipes you're selecting are in line with your culinary abilities. And that can grow over time, but I always say to our professionals, meet your clients where they are. So you also have to meet yourself where you are, and usually we're our own harshest critics. So that can be really difficult, because sometimes where you are isn't necessarily where you want to be. But if you don't at least start there, you're never going to move forward.
Such great advice. Do you have like a recipe on That Clean Life that like tops them all?
Like, oh my gosh.
The best beginner recipe?
I think that our most popular recipe of all time, and I'm not sure, it's been a while since I checked, but I think it's a blueberry chia pudding. And this is gold, because you can make your full week of breakfasts on a Sunday night in, I'm not even kidding, like 5 minutes. You just mix everything together. You don't even have to divide it into jars if you don't want to, but if you're a grab and go person in the morning, you can totally do that. And everyone loves this recipe for their clients, because they can make it so quickly and then have breakfast ready to go for the week. Clients love that recipe because they only have to cook once. And breakfast is one of those things that, even though I'm a nutritionist and I love variety, I don't mind if someone eats the same breakfast every single day. It reduces decision fatigue. It increases how successful they're going to be, because they know exactly what to do. And in the morning when they're tired and in a rush, they're more likely to actually do it. If they already have a plan, it's already done. So that's the most popular recipe for sure.
They say that you are the product of the five people with whom you spend the most time. Imagine you could spend time with hundreds of fellow entrepreneurs and go-getters looking to uplevel their business, body, and mindset. The Entrepology Collective does not belong to us. It belongs to you. Come hang out with us on Facebook and let us collectively inspire, support, and cheerlead you towards your vision for contribution, your commitment towards better health, and your journey of mindset mastery. We are in this together. We are entrepreneurs by birth, by choice, and by mission. We are the Entrepology Collective. Search for us on Facebook and come join your tribe. Yeah. And I, you know what I love that you mentioned in there was this idea of decision fatigue. Because one of the things I do as a clinician is I really, like, as I'm listening to people talk about why they just can't do it and how it doesn't work for them or those, their situation is unique, which we all do when we're sitting across from our respective coaches. But one of the things I hear a lot, and I think now it's just an experience in terms of seeing it, is this idea of decision fatigue, where when you're a busy person, and especially if you have a lot of responsibility in what you do, you literally are just done. Like you can't decide what you want for dinner. You can't decide what restaurant you want to go to. And you definitely can't decide what you're going to make for breakfast the next day. How do you, as a professional, as a nutritionist, how do you combat some of these things? Like, are you very much like, let's just put everyone on an eating routine? Are you like, variety is the spice of life? Like, how do you accommodate some of these very real pressures that people have in terms of executing on their meal planning?
I love this question. And I actually feel like I have a pretty good answer to this. Like, this is one thing I feel like I have figured out. So variety is the spice of life, but also decision fatigue is real. So how do we overcome this? Overall, when I look at someone's diet, I'm not looking for day-to-day variety. We actually didn't even evolve for day-to-day variety, really, because we've got whatever food is in season, we've got an abundance of it, and then that changes as our seasons progress. So when I look at someone's diet, I'm looking for variety over the course of a year. So you shouldn't be having that same exact blueberry chia pudding every single day for a year. But if that recipe works for you, what I would tell a client to do then is to keep that base, that chia seed pudding, you know, you've got your healthy fats, you've got tons of fiber, and switch up what fruit they're having with it. So when blueberries are in season, go for it. Have blueberries every single day for the, you know, 8 weeks that we actually have blueberries in season here in Ontario. But then when late summer rolls around and suddenly Ontario peaches pop up and they're beautiful and juicy, switch to that. And the same goes for all the vegetables you're eating, whatever greens are in season, grab those ones. Not only is this a great way to get variety while still sticking to your routines, because you're changing up the ingredients, but not necessarily the recipes themselves. But also it's a lot cheaper because eating food that's in season tends to be on sale. It's healthier because when you're getting local in-season produce, it's more nutrient dense. It hasn't traveled as far. So there's less time for nutrients to sort of die off as they're exposed to the elements. And also sustainability is huge, right? I'm a millennial, so this is my highest priority, is being able to enjoy this earth that I live on for the rest of my life. And if we all started eating local seasonal food that didn't have to be transported across the world, automatically all of our diets would become way more sustainable. So that's my best tip for combating decision fatigue while also keeping your diet with a ton of variety, is just rotate based on what is around you, but stick to those same categories of fruits, greens, grains, nuts and seeds, and just switch up which ones you're buying.
Yeah, such great advice. And you mentioned dietary trends in there, like the sustainability. I'm curious, because you guys get to see behind the scenes, like what are the primary types of diets that people are into right now? Is it like, are we leaning towards keto? Are people leaning towards vegan? Are we like intermittent fasting? Like, where do you see the trends on the back end of your software?
Oh my gosh, it's so interesting, the insights actually. So all of our recipes are developed and tested and photographed in-house. We have a whole team of recipe developers. So we get emails pretty much every single day from clinicians who are requesting specific recipes or specific diets for their clients. So we really get this awesome insight into what clinicians are doing, where the trends are going. And I have to tell you, Megan, there is no one specific direction. In any given day, we're going to get recipe requests for autoimmune, paleo diets. We're going to get recipe requests for keto diets. We're going to get requests for super simple, macro-friendly meal prep recipes, low-fat vegan. It seems to be all over the place, but the overall theme seems to be that people are moving in a direction of personalized nutrition rather than, you know, generations past, it was diets that would pick up and, you know, we had Atkins and then we had South Beach and then we had low fat and it sort of, everyone would go towards a specific diet. Whereas now the trend seems to be more leaning towards, okay, you can get a genetic test and then find out exactly how you should be eating, or you should sit down with a practitioner and look at your exact symptoms and your goals. And they're going to recommend the diet that most fits your biochemical individuality. And we are huge fans of that at That Clean Life. We do not believe that there is one size fits all. We do not make all of our recipes for a specific diet. We believe that as many people as there are on the planet, that's how many unique diets there are. And everyone thrives on something different. So I'm seeing maybe a little bit leaning more towards like low carb as more research is coming out showing all of the damage that has been done since, you know, high fructose corn syrup and all of these really simple carbohydrates started making up the bulk of our diet. We're getting a little bit smarter. Fat is definitely back, but the main trend is towards personalized nutrition.
I love that because I actually find people are more dogmatic about how they eat than they are about political or religious affiliations. Like these, this is the whole new taboo topic at the dinner table is like everybody's diet. And I don't know why we're not having this conversation more, that as totally unique individuals, we're probably going to have a diversity of needs in terms of how we eat. So I really love that you just address that because it's something that we speak to so frequently in our practices. How do you guys talk about this idea? Like, I do find that diet is really is so personal for people, and they're so emotionally connected to that. Why do you guys think that is?
You know, I really don't know what it is. I was vegan for over 8 years, a really long time. I went vegetarian when I was like 14 and vegan shortly after that. And when I stopped being vegan, I had a vegan Instagram account for a really long time. And this was before influencer marketing was a thing. And I got a couple sponsorships and people knew me as vegan. That was a huge part of my identity. Like the food I was eating every day was the first thing I would talk to people about when I met a new person. And looking back, I just can't believe that my identity was so wrapped up in that. But when I stopped being vegan, I really had to encounter that full on. People who I was friends with, who supported me, stopped being friends with me, stopped supporting me. And I realized exactly like you said, people are more attached to this than they are to their religion. And then I was able to see that same pattern of behavior outside of the vegan community, but in the keto community. You know, you have to have exactly this number of net carbohydrates and you have to fast for exactly this number of hours. And there's really no evidence that one specific eating pattern is going to work for every single person. There can be tiny little variations that can actually make a huge difference for someone's biochemical individuality. So I don't understand what all the fuss is about, why everyone's arguing. I heard a really interesting conversation once about how, you know, we talk about apes and like a gorilla is 98% plant-based, but they do eat some bugs and some non-plant nutrition sources. But in the vegan community, oftentimes people will say that because it's such a small part of their diet, it almost doesn't count and it shouldn't even be factored in. But then you look at breastfeeding infants, and over the course of a lifetime, that accounts for a very, very tiny portion of their nutrition, certainly less than 2%, yet it's such an important 1 or 2%, right? That actually makes a huge difference. So these tiny little variations in not following the quote unquote rules that people get caught up in, that might actually be the little difference that's gonna make that diet work for you. So you know, we feel really strongly that people should listen to their bodies. If you're working with a practitioner, make sure that you choose a practitioner who does use personalized nutrition versus just prescribing the same diet to everybody, because it's the difference between surviving and actually thriving.
Well, and that's just it. And we talk about this in our practice all the time. There's this line of fine, and that is the level of service you can expect from that traditional system. And I don't mean any disrespect by it, but it is their job to make sure you are fine, meaning you're not anemic, you're not this. And what we do in our practice is we pick you up from the line of fine and we move you towards that optimal place. And within the debate about food, I think that's part of it, is that we have there needs to be a new lens. It's not just can we prevent scurvy. It's how do we actually help you to thrive? But it's so interesting to me. It's uniquely food that we get. We like our knickers are in a knot about it. It's not like we have a debate of like spinning versus yoga. We're not nearly as like, we don't put our heels into the ground the same way we do with food. So I'm totally curious. I'm curious from our audience too, like why we take it so personally, what we put into our mouths. It's super interesting and fascinating to me.
Totally.
Ashley, one of the things I'm curious about is as you guys put your recipes together, I think there's two lenses here, right? There's the, okay, let's make sure that we are appealing to what the trends are in the marketplace. But then I think as practitioners, we also have things that we are paying attention to that aren't necessarily first and foremost in the minds of either our patients or the average consumer. And one of the things I'm thinking about in that context is like microbiome diversity. Is that the kind of thing you guys think about when you're starting to put together some of your recipes?
So the main things that we think about when I'm putting together recipes, our recipe developers are all holistic nutritionists, nurses, like they all have a background in healthcare. The first thing that we think about is this a recipe that someone is actually going to make? Because at the end of the day, you can give your clients the best, healthiest recipes that meet all of the nutritional needs that you've identified. But if they're not actually going to go home and make that recipe, it doesn't matter. So we are all about fresh, simple, minimal ingredients, minimal steps, so that there's maximum chance for that plan to actually be implemented. And then after that, it's really looking at how can we use whole ingredients that people will be able to find no matter where they live, because we have members all over the world. So we can't use brand name ingredients. We can't use that cool new product that every influencer has received on Instagram. Like they have to be whole foods that you could buy in Canada, in the US, in the UK, in Australia. So, you know, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, seeds, simple stuff like that. And how can we make it familiar to people, but also interesting and willing to make it so they're willing to try something different? So a good example is like a shepherd's pie recipe. A lot of people are really familiar with that recipe, but maybe not the healthiest thing to sit down to. So instead of having a huge plate of, you know, mashed potatoes and meat and maybe some peas or corn, but not really anything else, we'll create a recipe that uses cauliflower instead of the mashed potatoes, because when a practitioner is sitting down with a client, they're giving them a recipe that's familiar, but that's a little bit improved and is getting them to try something new. And then, you know, the practitioner could counsel them to also maybe have a salad on the side or something like that to switch it up even further. But probably our favorite types of recipes to create are something that somebody will see the recipe, immediately know what it is because they've had it since they were a kid. It hits that nostalgic point for them where they're excited to have it, but also is an improvement and is introducing them to a small way that they can improve their diet without changing too much.
Such a great perspective. And you know, in building out those pieces, like, are people actually going to do it? I find one of the things that actually makes that helpful when people take that initial step is to help them stock their cupboard with some core healthy food staples. And I was going to put you on the spot and be like, what are your top 10 favorite things that you have in your cupboard that you can kind of make any meal with? But here's what I want to do is I want to help you out with that. And I want, between the two of us, we come up with our own top 10 list of things everybody should have in their cupboard as they get started on this journey, or as they're like, I just want to level up a little bit in terms of what I'm eating. Can we do that? We're going to go back and forth. We are going to like build it as we go. What's the number one thing in your cupboard right now that you're like, I can't live without it?
Okay, always, always with the healthy fats cooking oil is, I will never tell anyone to throw out food, but if you have Crisco in your cupboard right now, throw it out. And like maybe even in some kind of biohazard disposal way, because I do not think that that should be anywhere in our environment. So I always have at least three healthy fats in my cupboard. I always have a really good quality extra virgin olive oil because I love the taste of it. There is pretty much more research on extra virgin olive oil than any other type of fat, and all of it is excellent. So that's one. Always, always with the coconut oil or ghee as well. I like to have some kind of hard saturated fat that I can use just because I think it's important to switch up where you're getting your fats from. And then I'll usually have one like wild card. Sometimes I'll have a walnut oil or an avocado oil or just something to switch it up. Clinically, one thing that I noticed, I used to use micronutrient analysis a lot, so you get to actually see people's status for the different fatty acids. And when someone is exclusively cooking with one type of oil, whether it's only olive or only coconut or only ghee, they tend to not have the best status for all of the other types of fats. So even though there's a ton of debate about like saturated versus unsaturated versus omega-3, omega-6, whatever, I really do believe that variety is the spice of life again, and that you should always have at least 2 to 3 really good quality fats to choose from.
Okay, I'm going to have more questions for you about the fat piece, but I'm going to make us focus on our top 10. So one of the things that I feel like I reach for all the time, I've got 3 kids. So I'm just going to give this context, who come home and then their blood sugar crashes before my eyes and I have less than 10 minutes to feed them for the sake of like our entire household. And so one of the things that just is always in my fridge are eggs.
Yes.
I can add anything to eggs. I can turn it into like a rapid omelet. I love poaching eggs and putting them on sweet potato. All of these things I can do in less than 10 minutes, but eggs are like my go-to to get rid of leftovers and to feed kids really quickly on a weeknight.
I love that. That's also a huge staple for me too. So the next one I would say I always have on hand is some kind of orange carbohydrate. And that might not mean a lot to people who are listening and not practitioners. So let me explain. Sometimes it's a sweet potato. Sometimes it's a butternut squash. Sometimes it's a bag of carrots that are local. But something that's a bright orange color, because I find it's a harder color to get in our diet, that's also going to act as a good carbohydrate source, because I do believe in carbohydrates for brain. I'm a very active person, so I don't want to be like your kids and have my blood sugar hitting the floor. So always having like a roasted sweet potato in the fridge or some roasted squash on hand or some carrots that I can steam up and have as a side is essential for me.
Such good advice. Okay, don't judge me, holistic nutritionist. I'm just going to be honest. I always have some kind of can of clean, healthy fish available. So whether that's like wild Pacific salmon or like organic clean sardines or something like that. And I'll be honest, I can't get my kids to eat sardines, but those are the like small fish for your brain. I love having access to it. And some days we get really busy and so we don't have time to make whole food things. But when I have some good clean fish in a can, I can throw it into pasta with my kids. I can put it on a piece of toast for them, or we can literally just like mix it with some avocado and eat it right out of the bowl. But that is like a staple that I always have in my cupboard.
Amazing. No judgment. I think you and I eat very similarly because we also have a lot of canned fish and I'm obsessed with sardines. Don't love them, but nutritionally obsessed with them.
No, they're amazing. I had this conversation on Instagram with Josh Chitalis as an aside, and he posted a picture of his lunch with sardines and I was like, that looks amazing. And he wrote to me, he's like, are you being serious? I'm like, yeah, I'm being serious. Like, my brain's excited at the thought of that. And I realize this is not normal. Like most people are probably driving right now thinking, if we're supposed to eat sardines, I'm out. But that it's like a level 10 move, guys. But if you start eating sardines, I promise you, you're going to be like, what happened to my brain? It's amazing. Just throwing it out. It's a thing. It's a thing. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be your thing, but we're going through our top 10 list. Okay. Clean canned fish was mine. What's your number five?
So I'm actually going to like spin off on that, because the way that I eat that cleaned canfish, the way that I eat a can of sardines 3 times a week, is by having a really, really good quality cracker in my cupboard. So I have sardines and crackers. That's my way to eat them. And for crackers, I always look for something that is like super packed with fiber. I love a flax cracker. I love a raw cracker. Sometimes I'll get those flax-based wraps and I'll actually toast them up into crackers myself. But if you can find a really good quality cracker that maybe isn't so much the high glycemic processed, like sugary, whether it's flour or rice flour or one of those, and find one that's more focused on healthy fats made with like seeds, or even almond flour, then that is going to save you so many headaches, because you can have it for a quick snack. You can have sardines and crackers for lunch, which I often do at my desk. And it's also, again, a familiar food. So I don't recommend a ton of processed food, but a good quality cracker is something I always have on hand.
Yeah, I will take some flax crackers and I'll mush them all up, and then I'll often use it as like a coating on fish. So my kids can have crispy fish. And they love it. It's how I get fish into them.
I love that. I was a shake and bake baby. I ate that like all the time growing up. So I love that idea.
Yeah, you can actually do it and not be poisoning yourself at the same time. Okay, so one thing I actually use all the time, it took me a little bit of time to understand how to use it, but now I can make a sauce in a second with it, and that's tahini. So for people who are like, what's tahini? It's sesame paste, so it's really high in calcium. You can make your own homemade hummus with it. Homemade hummus is so easy to make, and it's something that kids love to do. But you can make really awesome, flavorful sauces to pair with meats or with potatoes or Brussels sprouts or cauliflower or broccoli or all of the things. But I find tahini is one of those things that I can make any meal way more flavorful if I've got it sitting in my cupboard.
So true. The other night I took my dog out for a walk, and I was walking by this restaurant and they had out in front of their garbage a 5-pound bucket of tahini. And my first thought is like, that's what I need in my life.
it's so great. There's just so many awesome recipes. So flavorful.
It's the best. Okay, mm-hmm. So we are on number 7. So I'm going to say number 7 is frozen vegetables. Always have it on hand, because you never know when you aren't going to have time to go to the grocery store. And having your favorite frozen veggie to be able to quickly add into any meal is such a game changer. I can't tell you how many times I would have only been eating canned fish for dinner and maybe some, you know, roasted sweet potato, because those can sit on the counter forever. But I was able to throw in some roasted cauliflower or broccoli because I always have a bag. My personal fave are the cruciferous vegetables. So broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, they hold up pretty well when they're frozen. And frozen vegetables, I don't even know if I need to say this because I feel like everyone knows at this point, but they are just as nutrient dense, if not more nutrient dense, than buying it fresh from the grocery store, because they're flash frozen as soon as they're harvested, and harvested at the peak time and all of that. So don't be afraid of frozen vegetables. They might not taste the best, but nutritionally, they will elevate those meals where you didn't have time to go to the grocery store, or you just got home from a flight and otherwise you might not be eating the healthiest meal.
Yeah, and they just mix so well with things. So like I will throw them in my eggs, in my egg omelet that I'm doing for the kids. Like it just, you can mix those frozen vegetables in so many things. I totally agree with you. One snack I always have on hand are walnuts. I get them at Costco, and it doesn't matter whether you're like on a full keto diet or you are on a plant-based diet. They're totally friendly unless you are a nut-free house. And then I often will have in the afternoon, I'll have a little bowl of walnuts. I'll put some olive oil on it, and then I will sprinkle some like chunky salt on top of it. And it is an awesome snack.
I love that. I've never tried that, but my mouth is like watering thinking about it. I just love fat and salt together. Those are like my favorite.
Right. And like that is why potato chips are so successful. But you can DIY it. You can just throw a little bit of olives in a bowl. Super, super easy to do. And these are things too, if you're listening, you're like, well, I'm at work. Like, how am I supposed to do it? I would have a little drawer of like grocery staples at work. And walnuts are one of them. And I'd often have a little thing of olive oil at work, and you can just mix those things up. So you don't have to fall victim to the never ending candy and sweets and things like that in the staff room, as it were.
Always. Yeah. I used to have a jar of olive oil in my desk when I worked in an office, and I can't tell you how many times it saved me from the nasty canola oil salad dressing that would have come with my salad.
I love that we have this in common, right? We have secret stashes of olive oil at work. Like, guys, yeah. you can totally do this. You can be weird like Ashley and I. Okay, we're at number nine.
Okay, number nine. Actually, because you said salt, that's my number nine. A good quality salt. Salt is like the biggest game changer. I actually went to culinary school, and I used to eat at restaurants and think like, how do they make it so good? Guys, I'm going to save you the culinary training. It's salt. Salt is the answer. If your food isn't that great, it's probably because you undersalted it. You always need a little bit more salt than you think you do, and quality really matters. So my all-time favorite salt, if you want to get bougie and go spendy with it, is a nice Meldon flaked sea salt. Mm-hmm. It's the absolute best. But I have a whole collection of salts, just like I have a whole collection of fats. So experiment with the different ones. You've got your Himalayan salt, you've got your gray sea salts, your white sea salts, there's black salt out
there.
Truffle salt. Mm-hmm. Find whatever you love, and it can take something as simple as a roasted vegetable and turn it into something you will happily have at the center of your plate. People will come over and say, oh my gosh, I always thought I hated Brussels sprouts, but this is a total game changer because you season that up with a nice smoked sea salt. Salt is my favorite food, and I think that it is essential to creating healthy meals that you'll actually want to eat.
Totally. We just gave everyone permission to have crackers and salt. Some people have only heard crackers and salt. I was debating this last one, our number 10, because it's really super unsexy, but I use it all the time, and that is a really good quality broth. So an organic chicken broth or vegetable broth. My husband actually this morning walked by our pantry. He's like, how many broths did you just buy? And I was like, don't judge me. But when I have leftover vegetables, when I'm cooking rice, I can make soup two or three times a week because I can just go to my cupboard. I can grab one of the broths and I can add all of those sort of leftovers. I don't like to throw out food, so I tend to turn it into soups or stews. And if you have a broth on hand, you can turn just about anything into a soup. And on that note, one thing I always make sure I have access to in my kitchen is like an immersion blender, one of those handheld blenders. You can get them for $13, and you put all the things in the big soup bowl, and then you blend it up. So then kids aren't like, I don't like that, I don't like that, I don't like that, because they can't see it. You've now just like blended it into a consistency that they can handle. And you can just load it. It's like a hot smoothie. So yeah, broth is like my super unsexy number 10.
That was a really good way to cap off the list. I feel like that one tip alone, and then all the ways that you can use it to reduce food waste and get more vegetables in, like that was worth listening to this whole podcast.
Thank you, Ashley. I totally... Thanks. It's funny because people are around me and they're like, don't judge how I eat. And then, and I never do. I really, truly never do. But then when I'm around nutritionists, I'm always like, oh gosh, are they judging my broth or my this? It's so funny how we get like that. But we keep it super real, and we have a really picky eater in our family. So we have to get massively creative. It's not, I used to tell people before I had kids, I was like, just make them eat. They'll eventually eat. And no, they won't, actually. They'll have a full-blown hunger strike. And you have to get creative. Otherwise, you will feed your kid bagels for 12 years straight. So that's been one thing that's been really helpful for us. I want to circle back to something that you mentioned before, and that was just about cooking oils. And we kind of glazed over it, but it's really key. And you're like, if you've got Crisco in your cupboard, get mm-hmm. rid of it, throw it out. And I agree with you. It's pretty toxic. It's pretty toxic stuff. All vegetable oil is. Is there anything else that you're like, just throw it out? Just go in your cupboard right now and chuck it. It's not ever serving you. It's not worth saving it. And you definitely, like, don't even give it away. Like, just get rid of it.
In terms of cooking staples, I mean, I don't want to be a hater. I have celiac disease, so this might just be coming from a personal bias, but I don't think that anyone needs to have enriched white flour in their cupboard. I mean, live your life, enjoy yourself. If you want to go out and grab a croissant or something, I know I'm a nutritionist, but truthfully, there's zero judgment. But that is not the kind of food that you need to be eating at home. And I know there's a lot going on right now with understanding how different types of vitamins that are maybe not so natural, like folic acid compared to folate, can really, really affect us. So the idea that you would be baking up a batch of healthy muffins, but throwing in something that could actually be so detrimental to your health mm-hmm. and you wouldn't even realize it. So enriched white flour, just replace it with like a white, like a spelt flour, something that's organic and not enriched. That's a perfectly okay swap, but enriched white flour honestly freaks me out.
Yeah, it's actually a good one. And I have celiac too. And I'll say, because we're right at the front of the holidays, I love having cinnamon buns on Christmas morning. I have a wicked gluten-free recipe for homemade cinnamon buns and shortbread cookies, where we like reduced our sugar on them. We're not using enriched white flour. So for those hardcore bakers out there who are like, you just can't do it with these other forms of flour, you totally can. The interweb is this amazing resource to figure out how you can take some of those classic recipes and just switch them slightly. So you're massively increasing the nutritional profile and then just decreasing the garbage, especially this time of year.
Yeah. I always say, like, you can make whatever you want and it'll actually taste better. Go for the ingredients that are minimally processed. So a shortbread, for example, you can make a really good shortbread with almond flour, which is just almonds that have been ground up into a meal. And I think they've had their skins removed most of the time. But instead of doing your like Crisco, that shortening and white flour, use real butter, use a good quality almond flour. We're not talking about making it as low calorie as possible, but when you actually eat that, it's going to taste so good. And with calories come nutrients. You're going to get more nutrients from eating shortbread that's made with real butter than shortening and made with almond flour than enriched white flour. So it can be the same thing. And the quality of the ingredients will make a huge difference.
And especially this time of year, I love that you're saying, like, if you're going to have shortbread cookies, just have shortbread cookies. Like, just do it and do it well. Any other hacks for people as they're moving into the Christmas New Year season in terms of how to navigate that and then still maintain their health throughout?
My best tip, and I feel like over the years, it's really evolved, but where it sort of landed is that the best way to navigate holiday eating is to not think of it like holiday eating. Any given day of the year, if I'm craving mashed potatoes and gravy, I'm gonna eat mashed potatoes and gravy. And what I see across the board is that the people who are truly successful with improving their eating habits are the people who let go of that all or nothing mentality, and they don't hold certain foods on a pedestal or say certain foods are only for certain times of the year, because that's a recipe to eat too much of it. And also, because you have all these rules around food, that's a recipe for guilt if you break your rules. So the best thing is just to tell yourself that there's always going to be more. So when you walk into a dinner and you've got your turkey and your stuffing and your mashed potatoes, don't feel like this is your one moment. This is your one day of the year that you can load up on all of it and then it's gone forever. Have enough that you're satisfied and use the rule that food is there for you 365 days a year if you want it, to actually be able to exercise moderation rather than loading up like literally a kid who is only allowed to eat candy on Halloween, who eats a whole pillowcase full of candy in one night.
Perfect advice, and especially from someone with such an awesome background and expertise. And I feel like this is a great place to transition the interview. And I've got some rapid fire questions. But before I do know that we have a huge subset of our audience who are practitioners who are probably sitting here this whole time being like, can you just tell me what that clean life is and how it's going to change my life? So I'd actually love for you to just share that, Ashley, because when I found out about the software, I was like, this is a godsend, because there's certain things I will not do in life, and one of the things I will not do anymore is make meal plans for people. I just will not do it. And so when I heard about that clean life, I was like, oh, this is such a brilliant solution for something I don't enjoy pulling together. It takes so much time. What do you guys do for practitioners?
So it does take a lot of time, and a lot of practitioners don't create meal plans for that exact reason. So in a nutshell, That Clean Life is a meal planning software for health professionals. Like I mentioned, we have a whole database of over 1,500 recipes by the time this podcast will drop, of healthy recipes that have been developed by our in-house recipe developers that your clients will actually want to eat. And instead of spending hours using a Word document, scouring the internet for recipes that meet your client's needs, you can just input a certain set of criteria, like paleo, ketogenic, high in fiber, and low in polyunsaturated fats. And you can pull up a whole bunch of recipes that will work for those criteria. You can throw them on a meal plan. You can set certain meals to be leftovers. You can increase the portion so your clients can batch cook. Whatever they need to be successful, we're giving you the tools to create that for them in a really short period of time, because at the end of the day, if your clients are healthy, your business is healthy, it's really as simple as that. And we just want to make sure that every person who has a goal to make the world a healthier place is able to accomplish that goal without burning themselves out in the process.
A quick note from our sponsor, Badass Fuel. 2 years ago, someone asked me what supplements I take to maintain my health, my energy, and my edge, and they were surprised that I only took 4 things consistently. For myself and my patients, there are 4 basics that support, at a foundational level, nearly every system in our body. In my quest for the highest quality ingredients and the easiest system for consistently incorporating supplementation into my routine, I formulated and manufactured my own line of foundational supplements. My intention with this line was first and foremost quality, but equally important was a system for taking and naming the support that eased the incorporation of supplements into your life. Trusted for myself and my patients, under the guidance of your own healthcare provider, I'm excited to invite you to check out our foundational product line, Badass Basics. You can learn more or order the products yourself by visiting www.badassfuel.com. It's amazing. I love it. I love what you guys are up to, and we'll share with our practitioner group how they can access your platform and all of the amazing tools that you guys have access to. What I want to do right now is I want to throw some rapid fire questions your way so people can get to know you a little bit more. So we call these our KPIs. So just like we have key performance indicators in our businesses, I also believe we have them in how we live our life. So are you ready?
All right, hit me.
First question, who is inspiring you right now?
Ooh, okay. Definitely the co-founders of That Clean Life, Chris and Abigail. I think that they are the most inspiring people. I never thought that I would go back to work for anybody ever again, but they are just a different breed of human. They're so graceful and respectful and humble. And I'm actually so grateful. If you have the pleasure of being able to know them, you'll know exactly what I mean. But they are the most inspiring people that I've ever met.
Fiction or nonfiction, what do you tend to read and what are you reading right now?
Ooh, okay. So I'm like dedicated nonfiction. I always read nonfiction. And right now I'm reading a book called Far From the Tree by Andrew Solomon. I think it might be a parenting book, but it's really just about identity and covers all kinds of ways that parents and their children are different. So there's a chapter on parents who have children who are deaf, parents who have children who are diagnosed with schizophrenia. And it's really beautiful to realize how we're all so different, but we all are kind of coming together. And even though I'm not a parent, I actually think anyone who interacts with other humans should really pick this book up. It's amazing.
Perfect. All of us. I'm going to check it out. What is the one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
Definitely movement. When I'm not working, I teach spin classes. I love the way that I feel when I'm moving. You have celiac, so you can probably relate to this, but I was really sick for a lot of my life and I didn't know why and I had no energy. And when I finally got healthy enough to be able to push my body to its limits, I got totally addicted to that. And I can't imagine what my life would be like if I couldn't move every day in the exact way that I want to.
I love it. And I completely agree with you. What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
Something I actually have recently come to appreciate that's pretty badass is that I've been totally financially independent since I was 16 years old. And at the time, I didn't realize that what I was doing was actually really intense to be on my own that young. But the older I get, the more I look at 16-year-olds and think like, wow, girl, you were really brave. You really had it together. So I think that's probably like a secret badass thing about me.
That is badass. Well done. What do you do for fun or play?
I move. I love to get out and I take my dog for walks. I like to cycle. I love to hike. I spend a lot of my life in the digital world, which I think is something many millennials can relate to. So being able to just get out, move my body, be in nature, that is my absolute idea of heaven.
And finally, Ashley, entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Ooh, I think entrepreneurs, I think we're born this way. Actually, I think that when Abigail was on your podcast a couple years ago, she said that people become entrepreneurs, which I think is funny because everyone in her family is an entrepreneur. So I think she was born that way. And I know that Stephanie a couple of weeks ago said something about genetics and how the Compt gene could impact entrepreneurism. I'm not an expert in any of it, but I think that entrepreneurial traits are inherent.
I just love asking this question because although I get sort of two camps, I never get the same answer. Like it's just so fascinating to me. Ashley, you are so interesting, up to so many incredible things. Where can we send people to learn a little bit more about what you're up to?
Ooh, you can check us out at That Clean Life on all platforms. You can check me out at Ashley Sove Health on Instagram. That's pretty much the only place that I'm active. And yeah, we always like keeping in touch with practitioners or people who are just interested in healthier living in general.
Ashley, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Megan, for having me. It was a total pleasure.
Such a juicy episode and so important. You know, one of the things about food is that we do it multiple times a day. And so when we make even a few incredible choices throughout the course of the day, those have such a fast and compounding effect on our health. Likewise, when we're making poor choices with respect to food, sometimes because we don't even know any better, it digs us deeper and deeper into a nutritional and health rut. And so I loved all the things that Ashley was talking about today. So incredibly valuable, especially as we look towards the new year. And in looking towards the new year, one of the things we have spent time as a team doing is really stopping and reflecting on what it is that we want to do, how we want to have impact. And as my kids are asking me what I would like for Christmas, and as I look towards how we want to be able to influence our community in 2020, one of the things I would really love to ask all of you to do is, if you have been impacted by the Anthropology podcast, if you've enjoyed what we've been putting out there, for Christmas, I would love a little review from you. If you head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review for the Anthropology podcast, what it enables us to do is actually reach more people. I love the way that as a vehicle, podcasts and the online space are a way to make health more accessible to more individuals. And this is something that we can all contribute to together. So if you're feeling inclined, I would love to hear from you and have you leave us a review over on Apple Podcasts. And also, if you're looking for a community of like-minded individuals, super cool people who are looking to level up their health and their impact in the world, we're all hanging out on Facebook over in our Anthropology Collective group. Links to both are in our show notes. And like always, I'm wishing all of you a super happy holiday season. And until we get together next week, go build something amazing.